Tucson, good morning to you. Happy Friday, the 18th of September. Welcome into 1030 The Voice for this hour of Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. And we are going to go a little bit bigger picture today than just our region, just our community here. We're going to talk some election 2020 to close out the week. I started off this week wanting to talk about the politics of identity politics during election 2020. Talk about that for a bit. But looking forward to kicking off the hour, conversation with Rob Retzlaff, the Chief of Staff and Director of Operations for the Connected Commerce Council. We're going to talk about government and privacy and technology, regulation of technology. And I think it's an interesting conversation on the heels of the Trump administration this week banning TikTok and WeChat from U.S. app stores around privacy and data collection concerns from U.S. users that could be accessed by the Chinese government. So timely stuff. Always enjoy when that works out. That's our show today. Looking forward to it. 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to join the conversation. Looks like we have Rob on the line to kick us off. Rob, good morning to you. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Zach. Doing well, thanks. Happy Friday.
Yes, yeah. Thanks for making the time to call in. We've been discussing just about once a month, I think, on the show, some of the ongoing antitrust hearings and such that have been happening in Congress involving Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, looking at data and consumer privacy, which is the kind of original reason we wanted to chat with you today. But Rob, if you don't mind, because I know this is the world you live in, this is pretty breaking news as of this morning here at the end of the week. The Trump administration is going to go ahead and ban TikTok and WeChat from U.S. app stores. Is there anything in your world that you have any thoughts on there or have any considerations about?
So in terms of the TikTok ban and how it relates to what I do, we don't really have an association or a position on TikTok. I work for the Connected Commerce Council, and we're a nonprofit membership organization for small businesses who use digital tools and technology to essentially run and grow their business. So whether that be using Google tools and products or Facebook ads and marketing, we just want to make sure that they have affordable and accessible access to these digital tools. With the TikTok ban coming up over the weekend, we do know a couple of our small business members use TikTok to, you know, help promote their business and share their story and products. So based on what we're hearing right now and the breaking news that just came out today, you know, we'll affect our members a little bit. But, you know, TikTok isn't really a main concern of ours right now. We're mostly focused on the antitrust investigations into the big tech companies going on right now.
Yeah, on your website, when you list out your public policy and regulatory issues, one of them is privacy. Again, as you mentioned, you represent, you know, businesses, especially small businesses that rely on data-driven digital tools. Privacy is a concern for consumers. It sounds like maybe your group might be a little bit less concerned by some of the privacy implications of TikTok and WeChat and a little bit more concerned about what does it look like for government to regulate that and what does it mean for small business? Or are you somewhere in between?
So essentially what we're trying to do with our small business members and privacy is make it simple and easy for small businesses to comply with various privacy policy issues. As some people may know, it recently, over the last couple of months, CCPA, which is the California Consumer Privacy Act, took effect back in July. And there is potential for additional state privacy bills to become law for other small businesses to have to comply with. So when it comes to privacy, it is a concern for our consumers and small business owners and families, but we want to try and shoot for a national privacy law that all companies and businesses can comply with. So that way they don't have to follow potentially 50 different state privacy laws in all the different states that they do business in. So it is a concern of ours. We do want to make sure that there is smart data privacy legislation out there, but we just don't think it's necessary to have 50 different state privacy laws going on.
For sure. What the last time we spoke to someone in your network about the hearings that happened this summer related to antitrust, and it was Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Microsoft, I believe. Since the summer, is there anything, any issues that you've been working on over at the council related to what some of those national level conversations might apply to small business?
So it's actually not Microsoft. Microsoft was a couple years ago, and instead it's actually Amazon, who is the other company that they're looking into in terms of antitrust violations. Over the summer, we've been pretty active trying to help policymakers and those that are investigating these companies understand what small businesses use in terms of the tools and services that they provide to them before they take major action on these big tech companies. We want to make sure that they understand the full breadth of what these tools and services provide to these small businesses. And our members are those who depend on these digital tools, platforms, and marketplaces to reach new customers and operate more efficiently and essentially offer better products and services at lower prices that will end up helping the consumer at the end of the day. Over the summer, we've been pretty active. We had sent a letter actually back in May to Governor Ducey, signed by a few dozen Arizona small businesses, to make him understand and help him understand that these small businesses really do rely on the tools and services that the larger companies provide to them. So before they take any action, we just want to make sure that the small businesses, our members, have a seat at the table. And it's always great to get small businesses in front of policymakers and government officials to share their story, because they always love helping small businesses and they don't intend to hurt them. But unfortunately, when you take action on large companies like Facebook, Amazon, and Google, they're ultimately going to pass down the cost to the end user, which are the small businesses that rely on these tools and services.
Yeah, I knew there was a fourth, and I was trying to do it off the top of my head, and I did a little bit of research on the fly, and it was not Microsoft, of course. It was Apple. Apple was the other was the fourth company there that was a part of those hearings. So just wanted to clarify that. We are speaking this morning with Rob Retzlaff, the chief of staff and director of operations. There's a lot of research out there, specifically in Arizona, that Arizonans broadly, majority of Arizonans, are not interested in kind of antitrust or anti-large media corporation regulation. That they just don't feel like it's a use of time or money that they're interested in. Is that what you're hearing from individuals and small businesses in Arizona, of the same thing or a little bit different?
Well, let me go back a little bit. We recently released a report last week, a fairly large report that studied the impacts of coronavirus on small businesses and how they were affected and how digital tools have played a role in helping small businesses survive the pandemic. And as many people know, a lot of businesses are having to pivot or adopt new digital tools and technology that they weren't used to before. And what we wanted to find out is whether there was what we call a digital safety net that basically helps small businesses stay afloat with the use of digital tools and services to help them survive longer and eventually recover faster. And in our report called Digitally Driven, we found that there actually is a digital safety net that does indeed exist, and that small businesses who were more digitally prepared before the pandemic are expecting only a quarter of the revenue decline of those businesses that were least digitally prepared. So small businesses that embrace digital tools early on are generating more revenue than their peers. And in Arizona, small businesses are using digital tools more and expecting revenue to be above national estimates. In Arizona, they actually were ranked third in terms of states of small businesses and how resilient they are. And what we found, survey of 7,000 plus small businesses, 92% fell into three different groups. And these three groups are drivers, adopters, and maintainers. And 49% of Arizona small businesses are digital drivers, which compared to the national average is just 35%.
Wow. So that means when you say drivers, what does that mean?
Good question. So digital drivers are typically the most digitally savvy small businesses. They're the ones that are the early adopters of digital tools and are constantly deploying new technology and services to drive their businesses forward. That second group that I mentioned before, digital adopters. And these are small businesses who understand digital tools and services, and they understand the importance about them, but really haven't deployed them to the degree that drivers have. And that third group of businesses are what we call digital maintainers. And these are the ones that are a little skeptical of using digital tools and typically only use the basics like email and maybe a website. And in Arizona, there are only 24% of businesses that are classified as maintainers in this group.
That's interesting. I don't know if you had given me that list and said, which one do you think is most dominant in Arizona? I honestly don't think I would have said drivers. That's surprising to me. Specific to Arizona, Rob, as we close here, Rob Retzlaff, the Chief of Staff and Director of Operations for the Connected Commerce Council. What do you think the Arizona state policy on this issue is going to be? If you had to take a guess, obviously you're advocating, but where do you think our legislative and public sector leadership is on this issue?
Great question. So I think for the state of Arizona, we, in the report, Digitally Driven, have key recommendations that we have provided for small businesses, technology companies, and policymakers. So for policymakers, we have two key recommendations that we're looking not just for Arizona state legislators and policymakers, but policymakers all across the country. We want to make sure that there are public-private partnerships that exist to help address access and educational barriers that a lot of small businesses face. So those maintainers and adopters that really haven't embraced digital tools can go to various government entities and groups and help learn what other digital tools are out there. Second key recommendation that we have for policymakers is to promote existing programs and increase funding to those programs to help support small businesses and their resources. SBA has a couple of programs that are fantastic and have been a huge help to small businesses over the pandemic, but the truth of the matter is before the pandemic happened, a lot of small businesses didn't really know much about SBA at all, and SCORE and SBDC and all the great things that they do to help small businesses. So we're asking policymakers at the state and federal level to help promote these existing programs and increase the funding so that way small businesses can go to these different groups to help learn more about digital tools and technology rather than, the basics of how to compile a business plan, rather.
For sure. Rob Retzlaff, the Chief of Staff and Director of Operations. Your website, as we head to head out of this conversation, also that report, you have a link to that report on your website?
We do, yes. So if you go to connectedcouncil.org, on the homepage, right there at the top, is the report called Digitally Driven. And highly recommend checking it out, and highly recommend small businesses join the Connected Commerce Council. Currently, membership is free, and on our website, you'll find additional resources and tools such as our Fund Finder, and we help provide access to these digital tools and services such as workshops and other trainings that we do on a weekly basis. So definitely recommend small businesses check it out. Again, connectedcouncil.org is the website, and membership is currently free to join.
Rob, thank you so much for your time this morning, and we'll go check out that report. Stay safe and stay healthy out there, and thanks for what you do.
Thanks, Zach. Appreciate it.
Have a great Friday and a great weekend. That was Rob Retzlaff with the Connected Commerce Council. And again, the breaking news we touched on to some level is the U.S. is going to put bans on TikTok and WeChat on Sunday. So if you are a TikTok, Friday. If you are a TikTok or WeChat user, Get that time in. It's going away this weekend to some level. We'll be right back after this break. Going to talk some U.S. national elections. It is election 2020. We're committed to covering important items about it, even as we're a local show. So we're going to do most of the rest of the hour. Join us. We'll be right back after this break.
And national politics, the issues that matter to you. 1030 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
The Tucson Museum of Art is preparing to reopen after COVID-related closures and are excited to introduce in July 2020 the new Kasser Family Wing. The new wing will allow visitors to experience 3,000 plus years of Latin American history at the Tucson Museum of Art, where you can explore works of art from ancient to contemporary and one of the only exhibits in the country like it. TMA is excited to welcome visitors under new safety protocols. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to plan your visit. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about, and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more. WhyLoveWhereILive.com. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many local businesses right now, their physical location at the MSA Annex is dealing with changes to hours and operation, but I'm so proud of how they've pivoted to online sales and a virtual website tour of their brand new space so you can see what they're up to. Go to WhyLoveWhereILive.com right now and buy local to invest in the people that keep our economy going.
Trusted local news and talk all day, every day. 1030 The Voice.
Tucson, good morning to you. We are back for a few minutes together before our bottom of the hour news and sponsor messages. We just finished up talking about digital safety nets for small business around the country here in Arizona. Also a bit of antitrust hearings that have been happening the last few months on big tech companies, how all that affects local business. So that was an interesting conversation. I want to talk some election 2020 the next 20 minutes or so, and just some observations and some thoughts as we are about a week and a half from the first presidential debate. I know. That was my response. It was already, time is just flying. The first of three debates, I think, is the 27th, 28th, something like that. So the very end of next week, early the week after that, end of September, which is crazy. There will be three of them. And so as we near all those themes, I just had some thoughts. I'll share a quick one here and then go into depth on the politics of identity. Identity politics, and some interesting thought work that I've read on how both parties today have a different form of identity politics. I want to talk about that in a minute and what it means for election 2020. But I stumbled upon a Republican debate, a primary debate from 2007. And about an hour long, I just started listening to it. And it was amazing to me to hear things like you heard John McCain talk about restoring America to its greatness. You heard a no-name, you wouldn't know his name if I mentioned it, and I don't even remember to repeat it, to be honest, a congressman from Colorado who was running for the Republican nomination that year, talked about how we are just not making good trade deals and how we have a trade deal deficit in terms of we're not getting back what our, you know, our trade partners are getting more than we're getting. And it was interesting because Trump is so much a phenomena to his own self that I think we forget that in so many ways, Donald Trump said more effectively, and you can define effectiveness how you want to define it, the issues that many American voters and many American politicians on the right had been saying, just not as effectively, for many, many years. That President Trump, except for the issue I'll bring up in the next segment, that pre-President Trump really wasn't recreating the wheel. To some level, he had a sense of the issues that were not being communicated clearly and the issues that people wanted to talk about. Now, he played into some issues of identity. And again, I'll get to that in the next segment. But I continue to see out there on social media that the view of Donald Trump and who he's talking to is so pigeonholed into issues of race and identity that I think we as a collective, we are continuing to forget that there were some big, broad-based economic issues that Donald Trump spoke to more clearly than predecessors. Again, 2007, I heard the same things from Republican candidates. The party has been talking about these themes for a very long time, just not with the same effectiveness. And I see the same tenor on social media and on TV that I saw in 2016 that left a lot of people surprised that Donald Trump got elected. And I think if we continue to pigeonhole the reasons why he got elected and the reasons why his voter base is voting for him, I think we're going to be surprised again in 2020. I think we continue to miss out. The media and Washington continue to miss out on some of the bread and butter issues that are driving a lot of voters. By the way, across identities and across politics, I'll speak to this in the second segment. That's not an endorsement in either direction. Believe me, I'll just stop there. It's not an endorsement, but I'm just like, people, you're talking about this president in the same way you talked about him as a candidate. And you were surprised then. What makes you don't think you're going to be not surprised in a few weeks? So just an interesting thought there. Again, we look at Donald Trump as a phenomena. Yes, he is. But he also spoke more clearly and more effectively, obviously, to issues that have been talked about for decades before he came onto the scene. And I think that historical context is really, really, really important. When we come back, I want to talk about the politics of identity on both the Republican and the Democratic side. Some interesting stuff. I think you'll be interested. 790-2040. Come on back in a few minutes to continue on Tipping Point.
CBS News at the top and bottom of every hour. 1030 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Tucson, we are back. You're listening to Tipping Point on 1030 The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. We talked the digital safety net for small business, some antitrust legislation issues, or rather legislation, some antitrust hearings, and how a crackdown of large media companies, either in terms of antitrust or regulation on data and privacy issues. What's the impact of that on small businesses at a state level and a federal level? We discussed that with an advocacy organization earlier this morning. And then we're talking a little bit about election 2020 here on Friday as we close out the week, zoom in out a little bit beyond the local geography. Will be zoomed right back in to start next week, but do want to cover the ever-important election 2020, which is coming faster than we know it. The first debate is in the last days of this month, the first presidential debate. So it is here. It is just a number of days away. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the identity of politics, identity politics and election 2020. And this is one of those segments where the more I find out, the more questions I have. And so this is more of my stream of consciousness today. And you can get to join me for that, 790-2040. But this whole thing started in my head earlier this week when I read a Politico article. Again, this is not Fox. This is not National Review. It's not on the right. It's a kind of left-leaning political news medium, Politico. Talks about how Joe Biden leads them on Arizona Latinos, but President Trump makes gains. And there were a couple of things in here that were really interesting to me in Arizona specifically. Biden received 62% of Latino support compared with Trump's 29%. And what's significant about that is that Biden is just one percentage point ahead of Hillary Clinton showing in 2016 with this voting block here in Arizona. Is the context of this article. And what's interesting there is historically, right, George Bush in his 2004 election carried, I think it was 40% of the entire Hispanic vote across the entire country. So at least in Arizona, Trump is obviously not anywhere close to that, but also probably not as low as many would expect, certainly not as high if you are a Biden supporter. You'd like to see that 62% higher. The other piece that started getting me thinking about the identity piece and how it plays into politics is that there's this really weird thing in the polls right now where Trump is actually making the most inroads with young Latinos, specifically young Latino men. So the president is receiving, according to some of the latest polls in this article, is receiving 42%. Of young male Latino support. Now, of course, Joe Biden is topping Trump with young Latinas, 69% to 16%, older Latinas, 67% to 25%, and older men, older Latino men, 64% to 34%. A total of 64% of Latinos in the state disapprove of Trump. And I bring all that up because of a couple of things. One, and I was talking to a friend earlier this week, that a lot of my my political orientation, so like how I, or socialization, I guess is the word, how I grew up in politics, I began to be cognizant during the polarization in the Bush years, certainly the polarization during the Obama years, as I became, you know, more politically aware and to where we are now. And so I was telling this friend that in so many ways, if I look back, the politics of identity, of saying that our identities are massive drivers of our politics, in fact, maybe almost exclusively drivers of our politics, has been a view of politics that I think my generation and I have grown up. And so we often ask, what to a fish is water, right? What is water? A fish is in water. They don't know what water is. Water. This is what it's around. And so I think the politics of identity is such a driver, I'd say, for Gen Z and millennial voters in terms of how we look at politics and how we look at the world. Millennials being as old as 39 these days, 39 and 40 these days. And I've I think numbers like this point to that if we are viewing politics through only lenses of race and identity, I don't think we're viewing it correctly. We're not viewing it incorrectly. We're just not viewing it fully correctly. And I think we miss out on a lot of the pulses of our communities, of our politics. I think that race and identity hugely define our politics, but not 100%. It's really interesting. I've been caught so many times as I meet with someone or as I talk to someone and I don't know their politics, I've found myself having to push back on my own assumptions of what I think that person thinks. And I'm more and more surprised when I get into conversation that what society tells me the person in front of me should be thinking, should be asking, should be doing, they are not. That's an interesting experience for me. But I wanted to dive into this a little bit. This is probably more than a one segment conversation. But there was an interesting article written in the winter of 2018. It's called Strangled by Identity. And it writes that many observers of the issue of division, especially those who may be more on the right, but increasingly on the left as well, this article writes, tend to explain this division by critiques of identity politics. And the article goes on to say, and I thought this was interesting to bring up in light of where we're going in election 2020, identity politics is not just a problem of the left. It is a way of thinking that pervades our self-understanding. Our rancorous political conversation, this article writes, now consists of three competing theories of identity in America, three stories of how our differing backgrounds should shape our common political life. One of those it treats politics as a continuous struggle across racial lines and so conceives of coalitions on racial grounds, right? What is commonly thought of as identity politics. Another, and this is the one that's more owned by voters and politicians that are on the right of our political spectrum, insists that the principal distinction in our politics is not between racial groups, but is along the legal line of citizens versus non-citizens. And this article goes to say on is the left has their variety, the right has their variety of identity politics. And there's kind of then this they call it a third theory of identity that views these other two schools of thought as dangerous and proposes its own form of identity defined by, I quote, an ideal of cosmopolitan dignity. And I thought that was interesting. And in the second segment, which was just 5 or 6 minutes long, I mentioned I think one of the things that that then candidate Trump really picked up on, especially with voters on the right spectrum of our politics, along the spectrum of our politics. We're wanting to have this conversation of identity around citizen versus non-citizen. I saw this really interesting video, and don't let this name bias you, because the cable version of this person is often different from the non-cable version of this person. But an interesting interview with Ann Coulter, who I'm not really a fan of, but she said, in terms of like commentary, that politicians for the longest time, in the Republican Party especially, but across all parties, didn't realize that American voters, especially those who are on the right of our spectrum of politics, had been wanting to have this conversation of identity around citizen versus non-citizen. And nobody wanted to pick up that conversation. And to whatever degree you agree or disagree with how he did it, then candidate Trump picked up that, and Coulter calls it a $1,000 bill, this really hot topic that was energizing to whatever degree, picked it up and ran with it. It wasn't the only issue that put Trump into the presidency. I argued that in the second segment. But you could see in 2016 that while we often associate politics of identity with the left, the right has their own variety of it. And I think as we head to election 2020, I feel like we are seeing that in really sharp resolution. And this article that I mentioned goes on to say that when we view the other identity as evil, right, when we say one of those two views is evil or not, we miss out on the bigger picture. And I think for me, it is important to understand identity and race in politics, but it's not the only defining factor of politics. And I think when we create coalitions around racial lines, we're missing most of America, right? I think about it on Twitter. Only really 1% of the, you know, of a population is on Twitter. Twitter, Facebook, and social media define such of our view of the world. It's a very small group of people. And this article, you know, recommends, as we move forward, national service, national civic service, things that create and recreate a civic identity, not so much of a cosmopolitan view of dignity that tries to set itself above these two identities, these two views of identity, citizen versus non-citizen, or coalitions of race and ethnicity as identity, but a civic identity. And a friend told me, you know, the other day that we're really looking forward to the end of election 2020, looking forward to what happens when this election is over. And to me, this election is not going to be over for a long time. It will technically be over in November. But I have some really distinct concerns about what our conversations are going to be either way, whether Joe Biden gets elected or Donald Trump gets elected. Neither one of them are going to end the moment that we are in, because it is systemic beyond both of them. I'm worried about our conversation. I'm worried about our national dialogue. I'm worried about what happens afterwards. And I think refinding our civic identity as Americans that is informed by identities of race and ethnicity and background, because those inform politics but are not informed entirely by those themes. We've missed the building out and the sustaining of a civic identity, and I think we have to find that. I'm about at time. I want to get a caller in on this before we go to our last break of the hour here to go see the guys over at Mass Mutual. Tony, I got a minute, but I wanted to get you on. Thanks for listening. You're live.
Identity politics. I know that you're going over the national scene, but here locally, what I see with the Pima County Recorder's Office race between the Republican and Democrat, that really is identity politics. Those two candidates, one's very on the right, and the other one's very much on the left, the true left, where they, you know, when they really talk about the left. So I'm worried as a voter, because I think both of them are polar extremes. I wish they would have had a candidate would have been more moderate, because both of them are on the fringes. Exactly what you're talking about with identity politics. So if there's a local race that I'm paying attention to that you're describing, that would be the race right there for me.
Tony, I appreciate your call on that and following the recorder's race, maybe not as closely as you are, but at a local level, I'm seeing the same thing as national, Tony, is that we are getting more and more and more polarized around some of these issues. I don't think we solve our greatest problems when we are polarized along identity and on the fringes of our politics. I just don't think that we do it, but we find ourselves that way in the community. We are in a diverse community, and we don't solve problems by not recognizing those diverse issues. I don't think we also solve problems by minoritizing each other. And that's probably another segment. Tony, I appreciate your call on that. We share the same concern. I want to make sure we leave time for the guys over at Mass Mutual. Let's go to our last break. When we come back, experienced financial advice for the unprofessional and the experienced investor alike will wrap us up here this week. We'll return in a minute.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Tucson, if you're like me and my family, COVID-19 has made us take a hard look at our finances and financial planning. If that's you too, give my friends at MassMutual a call at 274-3749. They can help you navigate through these challenging times, integrate your insurance and investments with a purpose and a plan, and create a holistic financial strategy that works for you. Call them at 274-3749 to get started.
Hi, my name is Shanae with HR Resolve. Whether you are a self-employed individual or hire up to 35 employees, HR Resolve is your small business corporate office. We are locally owned, providing everything from general administrative and accounting services to payroll services and hiring. I started out just me, grew my company right here in Tucson, and want to help you succeed too. Call me and the HR Resolve team at 520-867-8384 to get started.
I'm Steve, and I'm the manager at Jones Photo. The company's been around since 1947, so we've been in Tucson a long time. The services we offer for our customers are film developing, prints of any size. We work with film, we work with transparencies, we work with digital files, just about anything that you can make a print from. Our goal in servicing our clients is always to produce the best work possible.
Jones Photo, 520-327-9521.
Why Love Where I Live .com. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many local businesses right now, their physical location at the MSA Annex is dealing with changes to hours and operation, but I'm so proud of how they've pivoted to online sales and a virtual website tour of their brand new space so you can see what they're up to. Go to whyloveWhereILive.com right now and buy local to invest in the people that keep our economy going. The Tucson Museum of Art is preparing to reopen after COVID-related closures and are excited to introduce in July 2020 the new Kasser Family Wing. The new wing will allow visitors to experience 3,000 plus years of Latin American history at the Tucson Museum of Art, where you can explore works of art from ancient to contemporary and one of the only exhibits in the country like it. TMA is excited to welcome visitors under new safety protocols. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to plan your visit. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Tucson, good morning to you and welcome back as we close out our Friday with an always awesome conversation revolving around a great financial strategy and practice from our friends over at Mass Mutual, making sense of your finances. If you're a young professional or an experienced investor alike, these guys got your back and every Friday share some great advice here on Financial Friday. Jason, Brian, as always, happy Friday to you. Good to see you.
Hey, what's up, Zach? Happy Financial Friday. So, hey, Brian and I, we're actually going to mix it up for the listeners over these next couple weeks. So we are going to have some guests joining us, some from our team, and we're also going to have some other professionals that we work with to benefit our community on as guests as well. So this week, I want to introduce someone from our team, Steve Mayer. Welcome to Financial Friday.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Nice. Now, you've worked for a couple radio shows before in the past?
A couple radio stations, yes. And I was told in both cases that I do not have a voice for radio. So, having said that, if your ears are just screaming because of the timbre of my voice, I apologize in advance.
Well, take it from me, you got a face for radio.
Oh, so. Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
So, all right. Well, hey, Steve. You've been having some really great conversations lately with clients that I thought would be interesting to bring to Financial Friday here about protecting the retirement planning that they're doing. So,
correct.
Give me a little bit of a story. How are you having these conversations?
So, one example that I have would be the conversation I had with a friend of mine. He had all the correct protections in place as far as he was aware. He had his income protected from death and disability, and he was putting into his 401k. He was making retirement contributions. Things were going along great, but we found a little loose end in the fact that the contributions he was putting into those retirement accounts, those were not protected. He didn't have a way to maintain those if he were to become disabled. So we were able to help him with that.
Gotcha. And what's interesting, what you're talking about is protection of the income is usually where we mainly go.
Correct.
But now what we're doing is we're talking about, well, it's not just about maintaining lifestyle because we're contributing to retirement. So what can we do about it?
So there's actually a tool that we use called RetireGuard that is, it works very similarly to a disability program where disability will cover a portion of your income. What the RetireGuard does is it covers the contributions into a retirement account. It covers both your contributions and your employer contributions if they have a match of any sort. So if you become disabled, if you become disabled, and you don't have this, then the retirement contributions just kind of get put on pause until you can go back to work. But if you have this in place, those retirement contributions will continue through even though you're disabled.
Now, is this something where if someone has a great benefit package at work, they've got, because there is regulation saying that the disability insurance coverage through work or individually owned can only protect a certain amount of income.
So far, yes.
So if they are taking advantage of the maximum, can they still use this as like a supplemental to this stuff?
Yes, they can get this in addition to that. It does not go above the income threshold that the government has laid out because it isn't income. It's simply retirement contributions. And they can get it as a standalone product. They don't have to get it in conjunction with a privately held disability and then have this on top of it. You can have it separate and apart from that. So it's nice. If you have everything through work and it's already set up, perfect, you can still get this.
That's great. You know, what's interesting about this one specifically is, you know, if we were talking about the life insurance side, you know, you're either alive or dead. When we talk about the disability, people don't necessarily get disabled and then at age 65, they're done.
Suddenly no longer disabled. Right.
It doesn't
work that way.
Right. It's possible that they could become disabled for a long period of time walking through retirement as well, right?
Correct. Absolutely. And so making certain that you have that retirement account properly funded is vital. Regardless of you're healthy or disabled, you're going to want those funds at your disposal.
Yeah. It's almost like do a lot of life insurance on someone and make them better off dead than alive if something were to happen. So, good. Well, listen, we got about another minute. Any last kind of thoughts you have for anyone in regards to this subject?
Nothing specific or generally speaking, a specific conversation would be good to have, though. So, yeah, give us a call and let us talk to you and see if this is something that could be beneficial for you and your plan.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I'll take a second just to tell you how much we appreciate, you know, you being a part of the team. You're doing some great work within the community, and you've got a great mindset, I think, in the way you critically think through a bunch of the clients. So we're excited to see you continue to build your practice and impact the community.
Sounds good.
Zach, I'm going to pass this back over to you, but, you know, just like we've said before in the past, it's really case by case. It's really unique. Steve, great perspective. And really, have the listeners give us a call. Anyone can call us and chat with anyone on the team. Our office number, 520-274-3900. 3749. And until next week, Zach, take it easy.
Take care.
Jason, thank you so much. As always, you can listen back to all of these segments, and that goes for workforce pivots. It goes for all of our focused segments here together, all of our news segments. You can listen to all of it on the podcast. Go to kvy.com/podcast, Google Play Music, or iTunes to listen. Put us on your calendar for next week as well. We're going to talk some city council stuff here in Tucson related to economic development and incentives. It looks like on Monday, workforce pivots as well. ASU President Michael Crow is our guest on Tuesday. I'm just looking through some of the themes next week. There's so much, but George Hammond is an economist from the U of A. He will be on Thursday to make sense of the economy. Lots of good stuff next week. We're on the air every morning, 9 to 10 in drive time here on 10:30 The Voice, Tipping Point. With me, your host, Zach Yenser. Make a plan, join us, and, you know, hey, again, as you're cleaning out the car, doing laundry, clean up the kitchen, you know, whatever you're doing to catch up on all the chores that I have to catch up at my home on the weekends, put us in your ear, check out the podcast, listen back. Hugh Hewitt coming up next. As always, Bill Buckmaster at noon. One last time, Tucson, thanks for listening, thanks for hanging out, thanks for being here, thanks for your calls, and for joining us each and every day, Monday through Friday, here on Tipping Point. Stay safe and healthy out there. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Take care.